And we're back with another segment of the Reporter's File. Many thanks for being with us, everyone. First off, a look at the headlines.
The rise in the number of Jews opposed to Zionism. The death of the poet of the Palestinian Revolution. Indian Muslims and education. And L'Aquila, 5 years after the earthquake.
The struggle against Israel is increasingly including people from different communities all over the world. People of different ethnic and political backgrounds. And as Issa Ali reports, that includes a rising number of Jewish activists who say they refuse to accept crimes that are being committed in the name of their religion.
Israel has long been a source of instability in the Middle East and around the world. The destruction of homes to make way for illegal settlements, assassinations, indiscriminate bombing of civilians, and an apartheid wall ripping apart Palestinian families and communities have come to define its very existence.
All this done in the name of Judaism, the oldest of the three Abrahamic religions. For years, Israel's overarching ideology of Zionism has been seen as synonymous with Judaism. But for an increasingly vocal and visible minority of Jews, Zionism represents an unjust perversion, both theologically and ethically.
To get a better understanding, I travelled up to Manchester to speak to Rabbi Aaron Cohen, the head of the Naturai Carta, Orthodox Jews opposed to Israel. According to his reading of Jewish scriptures, Jews are in a divinely imposed exile as a punishment for past disobedience to God and cannot establish a Jewish state until the return of the Messiah.
Part of the Judaism incorporates the idea of the Jewish people living in Palestine, but only subject to certain conditions. And conditions basically were that they had to maintain certain very high levels, ethical, religious, moral levels. And sadly, the desired standard was not maintained. And we were warned, it's all in our teachings, that if the standards are not maintained, then the Jewish people would be dispersed around the world in a form of divinely decreed exile.
That state of exile was observed until the British government, through the Balfour Declaration to Lord Rothschild, gave Palestine to the Zionists. Following World War II, Israel was established and millions of Palestinians were killed or driven out from their homes. To Rabbi Cohen, this is a violation of Jewish theology.
Our teaching is that this is a state of exile which we have to accept. Our job is to live as loyal citizens in whichever country in which we find ourselves. We are not allowed under any circumstances to try and fight against it and come out of this exile. This is considered a rebellion against the will of the Almighty. So our first opposition, main opposition, if you like, to Zionism is that on creed, on belief grounds, they're going against the teachings which have been handed down through thousands of years of generations.
According to Rabbi Cohen, his religious convictions also dovetail with a humanitarian disgust at the conduct of Israel.
This is a horrific contravention of humanitarian ideals, and part of the Jewish religion is to treat one's fellow man with compassion. So therefore, our opposition to Zionism is also on the grounds of total opposition to the way they've treated and carry on treating the Palestinian people.
Rabbi Cohen is perhaps one of the better-known faces of Jewish opposition to Israel. but I wanted to know about lesser-known Jewish activists from a more secular bent who have taken on a solidly anti-Zionist and pro-Palestinian position on the question of Israel. I went and spoke to Les Levidal from Jews for Boycotting Israeli Goods, who regularly call for sanctions to be levied on Israel. I wanted to know how his Jewish heritage influenced his politics.
At least in the branch of Judaism in which I grew up, the Reform branch, there was an emphasis on social justice. And in fact, perhaps our congregation was unusual that in the late 60s, it was incorporating texts from the U.S. Civil Rights Movement into the text for the ceremonies.
Criticism of Israel is usually shot down with accusations of anti-Semitism. While this charge loses its potency the more it's used, it's also increasingly redundant with a growing number of Jews involved in the anti-Zionist struggle.
Because Israel claims to be a Jewish state, a state of the Jews, I have a special responsibility to get involved in that issue, regardless of whether I do so wearing some kind of Jewish hat. This accusation of anti-Semitism seemed to be proliferating, so it was important that a specific section or fraction of the Palestine Solidarity Movement include Jews as Jews countering these arguments. And of course, that didn't stop the Zionists because they have the ready-made slogan, self-hating Jew, and so on. But that makes them look a little ridiculous.
Naturally, taking such a stance meant that activists like Les face huge obstacles to their efforts from organized Jewish security organizations.
Whenever we turned up at an event where the Community Security Trust is doing the so-called security task, then anyone with dissident views comes under suspicion, and in some cases is even excluded from entering the meeting. This has happened with many activists, for example, those from the Jewish Socialist Group, when the Israeli embassy sponsored a public event at the Institute of Education on Israeli science and technology, especially, for example, water-saving technology for arid agriculture. Then Naomi and I attended, planning to ask a couple of questions, and within about a minute or half a minute of me asking a question, these two thugs came along, one on each of my shoulders, and literally carried me out. The CST would act as if they were police, and there was some collusion with the police, at least turning a blind eye or even giving a green light to the CST to act as if they're police, ordering people where they can and cannot go, and so on.
To Rabbi Cohen, the consequences have been even more dangerous, with his home coming under attack from Zionist groups.
There was a firebomb, it was like a very powerful fire, the whole house is full of smoke. Then still the signs there, the black mark, you see.
So these are a result of a firebomb.
Yeah,
and that's why you
the fire people, he said, I have to, my post box is blocked off. These are Perspex sheeting over the window, which is brick-proof. If a brick falls, it goes against it. So otherwise, there was bricks going through my window. And air gun. I see all the scratches on it, but if you see, all the windows were smashed at one time. See this? Yeah.
It's evident that to be a Jew and to stand against Israel and the ideology of Zionism comes at the expense of one's own personal safety. The more Israel commits human rights violations against the Palestinian people, the more the public will speak out, including members of the Jewish community. And when that happens, Israel's false sense of entitlement and legitimacy will be forever eroded. Issa Ali for Reporters File.
He was called the poet of the Palestinian Revolution, known for his revolutionary and national songs sung by Palestinians for decades. Abu Arab, himself a refugee in Syria, died at the age of 83. Nellie Burton reports on his life and legacy.
Shah هاروسني عن طمرق الأيام.
A revolutionary singer and Palestinian refugee, Abu Arab, was famous for singing political songs and writing poems about the right of return for Palestinian refugees. His dream was to one day be buried in the town which he was forced from, Al-Shajara, in historical Palestine. A dream that would never be realized.
There will never be another like Abu Arab in Palestine. We can consider him to be the memory of Palestine with his poems, revolutionary and folklore songs. Abu Arab left his town of Shashara in 1948. He went to Lebanon and then Syria. He didn't live in Palestine, but Palestine lived inside Abu Arab. During his absence of over 64 years, we consider Abu Arab to be a nomadic political force. He wrote and sang about birds, trees, stones, everything for men and women of Palestine.
I had to leave my land in 1948 when the Israelis invaded my town of Shashara. We lived in the caves, in the mountains for long periods of time, relying on stealing plants and seeds by sneaking back into our town, risking our lives every time. My father died in the Battle of Shashara, so at the age of 6, I was the breadwinner for my mother and family. After I lost my father, I was with my mother. We lost hope. She was contacting her parents. We lived in Syria for a period of time. In that time, the Israelis destroyed my town and all of the surrounding Palestinian villages.
Abu Arab, deemed the poet of the Palestinian Revolution, was born in Al-Shajara village near Tiberia in Mandate, Palestine in 1931. He lived in a number of refugee camps in Arab states before ending up in Syria. Abu Arab formed his first band, which consisted of 14 singers, in Jordan in 1980.
We suffered from the terrible conditions we were forced to live in. After 1985, I was forced to become political. At this time, I began writing poems and songs and would send them to Palestine.
Ismail Talawi previously visited Abu Arab in his refugee camp in Syria. When asked what songs he would like to hear, Talawi answered, none. He would instead invite him to sing for all Palestinians in Ramallah. Using Abu Arab's original name, they managed to finally implement his return to Palestine, over 60 years since he has fled from his land. A delegation of Syrian refugees joined Abu Arab to sing in the West Bank.
Abu Arab was uncertain about coming back to Palestine, but I wanted him so badly. I wanted him to visit his country after being absent for more than 64 years. This man who sang more than 300 songs, all of them are about missing Palestine and fighting against the occupation and returning to his town of Shashara in Al-Jalil. I visited Abu Arab in Syria in the refugee camp, and when I met him in the camp, the first question that he asked me was, what do you want me to sing? I answered, Abu Arab, who sang for Palestine, children, stones and trees, I want him to sing in Palestine. I want the man who sang in 1948 to sing again in Palestine in 2011. He smiled and said, I will go.
It was a surprise for all Palestinians when they saw Abu Arab in Palestine. Most of them were arrested because of his songs and poems. There was great happiness which was on the Palestinians and the face of Abu Arab. We brought him here.
The reaction from the Israelis was that they were surprised he was here and it was Abu Arab, but they couldn't do anything. He was here. During the visit, he went to his town after 64 years. He went to Al-Rabat al-Butuf, where his father was buried. His father was a martyr who died in battle in Shashara.
He sang at his father's grave, missing Palestine, missing his father. I want to remind people that 2 weeks before his death, he was in Shashara and asked me for a service about coming to Palestine. He wanted to die in Palestine. He wanted to be buried here.